WNCW presents this week's More to the Story. I'm Paul Foster. My guest is from the Asheville Citizen-Times, Casey Blake. Casey, good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
Casey is no stranger to participating on More to the Story, but for those not familiar, if you would, Casey, share your roles with the Citizen-Times.
I am an engagement editor and all-purpose editor here with the Citizen Times. It'll be 10 years next month.
Casey, let's begin with some of the decisions that are still being decided and are moving forward for Asheville City Schools, Buncombe County Schools, when it comes to how this upcoming school year will be and what it'll look like.
So that's kind of the million-dollar question these days, and I think the key word on all of these school system decisions is that they're evolving. So the city schools have given a little bit more detail here in Asheville about what they're going to be doing, and essentially they're going to be starting fully remote. That was something of a reverse from their initial plan to do something of a hybrid model of in-person and remote learning. And the county school system is actually discussing that. Looks like following in a similar path, but doing a little bit more than that, totally remote learning. But what we're seeing is that schools are initiating a plan, they're taking feedback, they're evolving it. There's a whole lot of daylight between, you know, today and when schools are actually going to begin, so it's possible those plans will keep evolving.
If someone is listening that's a parent of a school-aged child, you probably already know about Governor Roy Cooper and the state of North Carolina's plans, that A, B, or C. But for others, recap that if you would, Casey.
Sure, that's right. Yeah, so Plan B is the one that we're seeing pop up the most, which is something of a hybrid model. A little bit of in-school learning, of in-person learning with kids rotating, maintaining 6 feet apart, wearing masks. The other plans have a little bit of difference. And Plan C, there's essentially fully remote. I think what we're finding is most local schools are doing a hybrid of those hybrids based on what's realistic. The notion of small children wearing masks, the true necessity of having high schoolers in person if they're able to work remote are a lot of the discussions being had. But essentially that Plan B hybrid model is what we're seeing pop up the most, and that's what the governor has issued throughout the state.
Let's move on now to topic number two this morning. And, of course, because of COVID-19, we all know about the importance of wearing a mask, and we know that we've heard that from leaders and health experts and so forth. But there's a story you guys put out recently, very interesting. It said, when masks are required, who enforces the rules?
Yeah, this is a different kind of story for us, essentially just kind of pointing out to readers, here are the accountability breadcrumbs on such an important public health topic. So, you know, here we find these very private businesses, grocery stores, being essentially the gatekeepers to a huge piece of this public health puzzle. And, you know, the media and other sort of accountability agents are really there at their mercy to hold that to account. And gosh, we empathize with any folks working in the grocery business, from the top of the chain to folks working in the stores. It's a challenge to enforce them, and it's a challenge to hold them accountable on how they are enforcing those mask rules.
And who was the reporter working on this piece?
Mackenzie Lunsford, actually, who folks would be most familiar with her in our food world, but she also does a lot of our grocery reporting and is just a fantastic investigative and narrative reporter.
She actually contacted several grocery stores for this piece. I know many of them made a statement, but she wasn't able to actually go into the stores and maybe monitor and that kind of thing. What were some of the responses from the stores?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, and this has been pretty common for us throughout the years, but of course, the stakes are a little bit different to get in stores. But I think we reached out to probably close to a dozen stores, and the French Broad Food Co-op here in downtown Asheville was the only one who allowed us or said they would allow us to even enter their store to observe. So not even to interact with customers, but just to sort of stand there and get our eyes on it. We are the type of newsroom where we don't trespass, don't break those rules of private business without their consent. But yeah, to a person and to a store, stores were not allowing us to come in and observe.
I know I've been into one before that says they're mandatory, but yet I saw people in there, and it's not like somebody was coming up and rushing them out the door. But in some cases, you actually will see posted on the front door, no mask, no entry.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's our challenge as journalists, is to make sure we're filling in those gaps between what the policy is and what the actual enforcement is, because I think anyone who's been into a store has seen someone come in with a mask and flip it down, or be wearing it around to their chin or as a headband. And we think, gosh, I don't know that this is the most effective. So it's a challenging situation all around, to be sure.
Casey Blake with the Asheville Citizen-Times is our guest on this week's More to the Story. We've got just a couple of minutes to bring up one more topic, and this one's been in the news for some time, but it is somewhat moving forward now, and that is Cherokee's Harrah's Casino kind of versus a possible future casino to us, what is nearby Cleveland County and Kings Mountain, North Carolina. That casino would be in the hands of the Catawba Indian Nation.
Gosh, you're right. It feels like this one has been in the news for some time. We know casinos are big business here, so this is a really high impact economic moment. But yes, the Catawba Indian Nation actually broke ground on this gaming facility that there's been a whole lot of talk on, but not a ton of action. It's not maybe coming. It's here. Still seeing a lot of opposition, but that project is moving forward, and it's going to be a matter of licensing and what it actually looks like, not if it's going to happen.
The story, of course, mentions there are still kind of two pretty big obstacles that could be in front of the Catawba Indian Nation in trying to move forward with the casino there in Kings Mountain, one of them involving a lawsuit and then also an agreement with Governor Cooper, I believe.
That's right. So, yeah, you know, obviously there's a casino or any gaming facility is going to want to do a little bit more than bingo and non-baked card games at their facility. But the hurdle there is going to be getting approval from Governor Cooper's office to go from the wonky technical part of it is a class two to a class three gaming system. But it essentially allows other forms of gambling, including casino style gambling. If it's going to be more than a bingo parlor, that's going to be a big and important hurdle for the facility.
And for those of us that saw it before and after, you think about the changes to Cherokee and the new life, so to speak, it brought up there and the job opportunities. And, of course, there for Cleveland County, they see that as a possibility of travel and tourism dollars and employment and all that kind of thing, don't they?
Absolutely. You know, and I think a lot of folks are really still hoping for some sort of partnership, are hoping that, you know, these opportunities can happen with healthy competition, but not competition that stalls the good parts here of job and economic opportunity.
On a busy schedule, thanks for making time for us. Casey Blake of the Asheville Citizen-Times.
It's great to catch up with you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
More to the story also available as a podcast on our website, wncw.org. I'm Paul Foster.